Just Measures Radio is on the air.
All systems go.
Path has led you to the Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be. Since I found serenity, but you can't take the sky from me.
Good evening and welcome to all. Yes, this is the Tinker, and you are at the Tinker Shop. It's now Saturday evening, 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, and you're listening to Just Measures Radio. This is the program for the 5th of April, 2014. I'm actually pre-recording this because as you're listening to this, I'm behind the Cheddar Curtain down in enemy territory. This weekend I get to go down and attend my father-in-law's 90th birthday party. It'll be actually on Sunday, but I've left in the afternoon on Saturday to make the trek down there. So, well, let's see here. Well, I guess the first thing I should do is say welcome to everybody who's listening in the archives and any possible podcast in the future. Welcome to everybody here in the JMR chat room. So, let's see here. I guess the other night we were talking online when Conk and Mother Earth were talking about recycling and such. And I did make a comment about aluminum and other metals. It is possible to recycle aluminum, scrap aluminum, whether it be from cans, old aluminum deck chairs, what else? Aluminum foil, I suppose, and, things of that sort, old tent frames, basically any source of aluminum, you can actually convert that down to a usable form. So, with all that said, we'll just go ahead and kind of call that a teaser. After I got going here today and started trying to dig up a little bit more authoritative information on this, I decided that I think I should probably save for an entirely separate program, because I think with doing metal recycling, aluminum recycling, that's one I definitely should go ahead and do a new web page on. I'd originally thought of just kind of giving a generalized briefing tonight on creative metal salvaging. That's one of the points I had on the homepage, but instead I should probably go ahead and finish up what I was talking about last week rather than jumping into a new subject. Last week I had basically done a sausage making 101, kind of a brief overview of it. So I should probably go ahead and finish that up rather than drop that halfway through and then come back to it at a later time. Tonight is probably a better bet to finish that up. So with that said, what we'll need to do is go ahead and go out to our usual website out at arlen-tower.com/tinkers_shop. That would be, obviously, as always, the T in Tinkers is capitalized. And either myself or Tinkerbell will go ahead and, drop that link into the chat room as usual. Once we get there, you'll want to go ahead and scroll down to the Sausage 101 webpage link there and click on that. So give everybody a few seconds here to do that. hopefully everybody's out there now. Okay, so let's do this. I know I had gone ahead and given some talking on the different portions of this page here last week, but I'm just going to go ahead and touch on a few more points that I probably should have hit a little bit better. Okay, here in the second section, the grinders and stuffer types, if we scroll down about five or six links here for the best made knife and cutting plates, you'll see here that these look, shall we say, somewhat rusty or whatever, and that will happen. When you clean them and put them away, it's obviously, you know, bare steel. So if there's any moisture in the air, it'll go ahead and give you a light coating of rust. Actually, this light coat of rust can be cleaned off very easily. Just need to use like a steel wool or even use like the Scotch-Brite pads. Of course, you know, after you've used your cutting plates long enough, one thing that you will find that eventually, if the cutting plates get mistreated often enough or long enough, you might need to resharpen them. Of course, this isn't a standard practice that is recommended, but again, coming from a metalworking background, there are a few things that you can actually do. If you get yourself some really super fine grit, wet or dry sandpaper, you know, also some people call it emery paper, you can actually, shall we say, repolish or resharpen the edges of your holes. Because the edges of the holes combined with a knife is what does the cutting. You know, as the meat gets forced into the holes, the knife comes around, slices it off. And obviously, the majority of the cutting is done by the knife, but a portion of it is done on the plate itself. The way you would use an emery or wet or dry sandpaper is you just, you know, basically, you know, get the paper wet and have it on a extreme as smooth a surface as you possibly can get to set that on, you know, to act as a backing. And you just go ahead and set your cutting plate onto there and then just work it gently, you know, like a figure eight motion. And essentially what you're doing is you're sharpening a knife here, you know, but it's a round hole, but it's like a knife. Doesn't take a whole lot, you know, because obviously if you'd keep at it for hours, then you'd be making your plate thinner, and then it wouldn't want to be cutting correctly because it won't have your spacing in there that you should have. But once in a while, just to, you know, tune it up, you know, if you notice that any foods that you're cutting with the grinder blade, if they're getting, you know, kind of raggedy looking, this is the way to do it. Also, I can't remember if I had mentioned it or not, but in the left-hand pair of objects here, you have one plate there that has like four lozenge-shaped holes in it. That is known as the bean plate. And again, it can be used for both cutting either your fats up or meats. But the primary use for that is for use with stuffing tubes because, again, it won't re-chop your meat pieces really fine. It's kind of, like I said, just kind of a couple general notes on it. Again, if we go down a little bit more, you'll see the Maid of Honor grinder. And these plates here, a couple of them, also are a little bit surface rusty. When I'd gotten this one, these are what the plates look like. Generally, I haven't used that littlest hole one. And so, obviously, it's been sitting for several years that, you know, it's just acquired a lot of surface rust. Okay, so let's go ahead and down here to the supplies section. And I kind of, you know, ran through generally the supplies that one would need. And for seasonings, a lot of times seasonings can be, we'll get into that a little bit later when we go through a couple of the recipes. Your meat cures, I did put a link in here to another file for, you know, for making your own meat cures. With going to that, I just kind of, you know, run through things in here a little bit. Traditionally, everybody thinks of the major thing used in curing meats as being potassium nitrate, saltpeter. That's fallen somewhat out of favor because of, you know, potential health effects. I have to admit I still use some, not a whole lot, but just as kind of a boost. That's the way I've learned how to use them. These days, predominant things that are used for ingredients in curing salts, sodium nitrite and sodium nitrate. You know, one's a I, the other's an A. uniodized or not iodized table salt or sea salt, sugar, and no, in here I do have, you know, saltpeter listed because that's historic. There's several cures. Cure number one has sodium nitrite and table or sea salt. And that's good for meats that are, you know, to be smoked over a long period of time, you know, cooler fire. And it's also good for curing fresh sausages. Things of, let's see here, bratwurst is one. Breakfast sausage, either patties or links, you know, that type of thing. Cure number two, that uses, again, sodium nitrite, table salt. And, again, there's proportions on this. This mixture is good for making meats that aren't going to be cooked or refrigerated. Some of the examples for this are, you know, salami, pepperoni, and other dry sausages. See, another couple more that fall into that category are ones like Landjagers and, let's see, Knackwurst. A couple Austrian sausages. There's also some Hungarian sausages that are done the same way. Another one of the sausages that can be sometimes, you know, eaten just smoked is the, let's see, the Polish hunter sausage. You know, many of the sausages that are smoked for an extended period of time, and especially if they bring them up to, say, you know, 160 for a while after they're pretty well smoked, they can, you know, all be, shall we say, eaten unboiled. You know, of course, it's, you know, up to the individual. You know, some people like it, some people don't. Okay, our third possibility in my listing of meat curing salts. This is, you know, like I said, these are obviously if you make your own. Number three in here is basically, I guess you could call it a sugar cure. And that, like, for example, this particular one, it uses 4 pounds of salt, pound and a half of sugar, and 3 ounces of saltpeter. This is about the only ones you're going to see that use saltpeter these days. And this recipe is, you know, gives, you know, it'll give your meat a little bit more of a sweeter taste. You know, sugar cure works well with different pork meats, the ones like ham and bacon, or like butt bacon, which basically comes from the front shoulder of a pig. Okay, now the last, in number four on the list here, this is basically where you make your own personalized spice cure mixes. You can use any one of the, you know, the three recipes up above. And in there, you know, after you've made some stuff, you know, two or three times, you know, it's sometimes a little easier just to make the spices up ahead of time and have them, you know, ready to go, rather than, you know, measuring out everything each time you make a batch. And this, you can take any one of the cures. You know, generally speaking, like for myself, I usually use a lot of recipes that are, you know, the cure number one. And, you know, like with the Ukrainian sausage, that's one. You know, the Polish sausage is another. And what you can do is just measure out all your spices that you'd use for, like, for one batch. You know, and once you have that done, you weigh it again. So you know how much, you know, spices you have for, you know, how many pounds of meat you're going to use. You keep that as your baseline, and then later on, you can always batch mix your spices. That way, instead of having 3 or 4 ounces of spice that you've mixed up, mix up a half a pound or a pound of them. That way, it'll make life a little easier for you when it comes time to make more. Get out of that portion of it here, and it looks like we're almost to the 20-minute point here. So why don't I do this? I think I'm going to go ahead and, you know, drop a tune in here and perhaps a commercial. You know, got to pay the bills. So we'll be right back.
What kinds of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks. Soft kids, fizzy kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs.
The dog kids love to bite.
Picking it up on the old banjo, put on the mustard and away we go.
When kids fight dogs, they yell,
hooray for hot dogs!
Armor hot dogs!
The dogs, kids, love to fight!
Hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Who do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Okay, well, we're back, and yeah, a little later, I got a couple other pieces of music I'm going to put in here, too, that just might make people smile a little bit, so, yeah, like I said, this is just kind of a night here where I'm kind of, you know, cleaning up loose ends here. Okay, so, going back to our webpage here, out at arlandtower.com, Tinker Shop. Sausage HDM. If we go ahead and scroll on down the page here to a little bit further, you know, we had the section there I had labeled the process. And like I said the other day, or last week, you know, I kind of zipped through this kind of fast, so I'm just going to go ahead and just kind of fill in some of the stuff that I left out the other day. For example, the first picture in here, I've got about where soaking sausage casings. Now, sausage casings, you know, come in several different fashions. You can actually just get them, you know, fresh from a butcher shop, and they're just kind of, you know, white, stringy-looking things. Also, you can get them that are, you know, basically dried and salted through, you know, various suppliers like Lem or the sausage makers. A lot of times, some of the, shall we say, larger man malls, around here it's like Menards, other parts of the country you have Tractor Supply Company, they probably have them as well, where you can actually get the, you know, dried and salted sausage casings. Those, you know, obviously definitely need to be rinsed off, cleaned off real well, you know, rinse them out even inside. And then you need to go ahead and soak those for roughly about an hour in warm water. Same thing goes for the fresh natural casings from a butcher. Again, you want to, you know, rinse them off really well, rinse them out, and soak them. Yeah, that basically rehydrates the casing. And I, like I had noted on here as well, the collagen or the man-made casings, you don't ever want to take and soak them in water. Because those basically, well, they're a man-made product. And because they're not a natural casing, they're just basically ground-up collagen that's been formed into a tube. So you start soaking them in water, and they'll just kind of want to either disintegrate or they become really brittle. And when you stretch them onto the sausage funnel, they'll tear a lot easier. And when you're cooking them or smoking them, they'll want to split more. And actually, this picture here is just showing one type of, let's see, how'd you call it? It's a combination. It's a sausage casing that actually has a bit of a plastic tube on it so you can start them onto the sausage stuffer easier. Next picture down, that was, again, where a person is taking and getting the sausage casing, you know, slid onto the horn. Actually, looking at that, it looks like it's almost like it's being used already. But with that, you basically just have to stretch it out and get it going, and you start stretching it over the sausage horn. And best bet is just to have that horn a little bit wet when you get started, because then that'll allow that to slide on easier. You take your full length of casing and load it up onto the horn, and at that point you're ready to start filling it. And like I noted here, if you do, you know, cut the casing on the edge of the horn when you're putting it on there, at that point your best bet is just to snip it off and use the part that you have on the horn already. Okay, again, next step, like I had here, when you get ready to do the actual stuffing, you'll want to take your grinder and carefully basically stuff the whole thing, you know, all the way down through the the funnel portion of it, of the grinder where you put the meat in. If you're using a hand grinder one, you'll push some down in there and just basically fill that area and just start cranking it forward real slow. And same thing goes for the electrics. If you use one of those, again, you just have to fill it up carefully so you don't leave any air pockets in there. You know, like here, you can see I'm using, you know, basically my bare hands. Some people actually wear gloves, and in, you know, obviously commercial meat processing, yeah, you definitely have to wear gloves. But like I said, you just got to make sure everything's good and clean, and when you stuff it, make sure there's no air pockets. Okay, next step down here, again, got the meat in the hopper, and again, yeah, use your push stick and just basically, you know, work it through. Once you start it up, you're going to have to stop it right away. Because when you get started, you want to get the last of the air out of the tube. At that point, when you do get a little bit of sausage starting to come out from the horn, at that point you can take your sausage casing, you tie it off, and you know, proceed from there. You know, if you have an electric, turn the grinder off and on as you go, and if you need to refill it, fill the hopper. Otherwise, with the hand one, again, when it starts getting down there, stop turning the crank, put some more stuffing material into the grinder, you know, and press it down and continue to turn. Okay. Now the other notes here that I had. Okay, yes. About how long to do it when you're continuing to stuff. If we go down a couple pictures, you'll see one here where I have it noted, stuff until the desired length is reached. I actually, when I made this particular batch of Ukrainian sausage, I deliberately went over length. I actually had them about 18 inches long. I was like, I'm not sure if I was going to fit that in my smoker too easily or not. Turned out, I actually had to retie them when I got through to pick them up higher, because otherwise they just wanted to go all the way down to my quote-unquote drip pan, which is, you know, too far. You need to have some air space all the way around the stuff so the smoking can be done evenly. My suggestion, if anyone does go ahead and make their own sausages, you probably don't want to go much over 12 inches long. you know, if you're going to be making straight links. Obviously, if you're doing bratwurst, you only want to go, say 5 or 6 inches long. But a straight sausage, you can go up to about 1 foot long. There's two reasons for that. One, they're not going to be hanging too far down in your smoker because you're going to have a difference in heat, you know, between upper and lower portions of a smoker. And you want to make sure that your sausage, when you get finished, you want to have the center of that sausage running at about 160 degrees. That's to kill any, you know, bacteria or any parasites. These days, a person shouldn't be getting any of that in their meats because the meat's all inspected, supposedly. But it's always still best to do it and make sure. So, the only exception I can think of for making it longer for most smokers than 12 inches is if you're going to be making like a ring bologna or a ring sausage. You know, obviously, you know, good old, you know, pie formula. You know, 3.414, 159, whatever. You know, if you have a 12-inch long piece, you know, if you divide that by, say, 3, you're going to end up with a sausage that's only a ring that's only, like, you know, about 3 inches long, and it's liable to bust on you when you try circling it around. Most of those you'll have probably about a 5-inch or so. And that means you could probably go to 15 inches. So, okay, so next. Next section here is about where I talked about tying the sausage off. When you have your individual links made, you know, for whatever length that you want to have or whatever length you're going to be using, you want to go ahead and give the sausage piece, you know, 2 or 3 turns or twists. You know, that kind of, well, basically twist together, just like you'd twist together a plastic bag if you've put some food in it. You know, you give it a turn. Turns it together, gives it a little bit more bulk there. Go ahead and tie it off. You tie off, you know, fairly good and tight. And I usually double tie it. And I leave probably about 6 or 8 inches worth of the cordage that I'm using, you know, to tie it with. At that point, you can go ahead and pull it off the horn another, you know, couple inches, tie it again, you know, squish any meat sausage base that you have in there back up towards the tube, tie it off. That way you don't have any air trapped in the end of your sausage. At that point, you can go ahead and clip it and, you know, separate the completed sausage from, you know, your grinder. Kind of like cutting the umbilical cord or whatever. At that point, once you've tied off the end of the start of the new sausage, you can go ahead and proceed just like you did before. You know, fill it in and stretch it out to length. And let's see here. Yeah, this last one here, I just had, a stick of the sausage here. That one's a little bit closer to length. This particular one was probably about 15 inches long. That could have actually been made into a ring.
Two years ago, I uttered the phrase too late as a warning that silver and gold prices would soon skyrocket, and thus they have this year. With our current financial predicament, you might want to consider someone who supplies silver American Eagles and other precious metals, a family dealer up in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Just Measures Coin Shop. Call Bobby at 812-305-7091 or click on the link at my homepage at johngaultfla.com.
And after that, we had the portion here on the smokers. You know, bad joke here, you know, smoke them if you got them. That's kind of a, or if you got one, that's kind of a takeoff on the old army phrase, smoke them if you got them. Yeah, this particular smoker that's pictured here on the webpage, this is actually one that I've made or adapted myself. This is just an old, trying to think of the name. It's one of the old, round top smoker grills Brinkman. That's the name. That's the company that made these, the Brinkman smokers. The Brinkman smokers in and of themselves, when they're, unmodified, you can do things either grill things on, like I said, or you can actually smoke things like, chicken or pork chops or whatever. They work really well for that. And because they function so well for being used for smoking, that sort of thing, in this particular case, I went ahead and made an extension for it. And what I had done to do that was, I actually took some flat stock that I had, kicking around it was about 1.25 inches wide and by about 1/8 of an inch thick. And what I did was actually bent up two rings, both of them of a size where, basically I could just basically set the lid into the ring, because what I was trying to do is, like I said, make an extension. Once I had those two rings made, obviously welded them up, cleaned them up so they were, nice smooth surfaces. Then I went ahead and got a couple new of the black stovepipe, that you'd use on a wood burner. Not the galvanized ones, just the regular old black iron ones. Went ahead and, basically flattened them out, because they come, curled up. Basically flattened them out, latched the two of them together to make one huge round one. And they were like a 6-inch pipe. It's 8-inch. It's either 6 or 8-inch. But anyhow, it doesn't matter. But then what I did, once I had them latched together, then I went ahead and marked them and cut them. And the reason I marked them and cut them was measured around, again, the outside of the lid, the lip that's on the lid. And so it would just barely fit inside the ring that I had made. Once I had that length measured, then I went ahead and cut the stovepipe to about 1 inch longer than that entire inside diameter of the rings. Then I took and bent it around gently so it all fit inside the rings. And on the top end where the lid would go, I set that down about halfway through the ring. So the black iron or black piping was low enough to where the lid could fit into the ring without being blocked by the pipe. At that point, I went ahead and slid the ring on the other end, and I left that project down and in about the same amount that I had at the top. So basically, the bottom ring is up about 3/4 of an inch, leaving that much showing of the bottom part of the pipe. On the top, I slid the ring up 3/4 of an inch, so I had that much of a lip for the lid to go in. Once I had those in place, then I went ahead and started drilling and pop riveting. I actually riveted this one all the way around, about every 3 to 4 inches. To give it a good tight fit. Once I had that completed, then I went ahead where the overlap seam was at. I did the same thing. Drilled and riveted, or actually used pop rivets on the vertical one. to again pull it tight so smoke wouldn't escape. Once I had that completed, I was able to literally just go ahead and set that in place. You know, took the lid off, slid the extension to the smoker in, and was able to put the lid on top. Once I was sure everything was good and tight, I went ahead and made some mounting blocks, which I screwed in, or I had screwed into the base unit, and up above there I just went ahead and used a couple of machine screws to go through with a nut on the inside, tighten it up, and so that basically made it a semi-permanent attachment. This gave me a little over a 2-foot extension to the smoker and allows me to hang several sausages in there at a time. Okay, and let's see, for feeding the fire. I would say with these smokers, usually they'll have like a couple levels. Down at the bottom, you'll have a level where you can have a bowl of coals that you feed through the hatch. And then up near the top of the original height of the smoker, there'll be a place in there where there's a grill, or where you can set a grill in. The way I do it, I use two bowls, one at the bottom for the coals. I use a second bowl sitting on the top of the grill. And what I do, that's put in there for actually three purposes. One, if you ever have a sausage drop off and fall down, you don't need it just ending up getting right down by the fire, you know, breaking up and falling in. Burning meat does not smell good and does not work for smoking. Secondly, that pan gives you some place to put some water in. Again, when you're smoking, it helps to have the humidity up a little bit higher when you're smoking. You know, basically, it's a cold, wet smoke then. It soaks into your sausages easier and helps with the flavor. The third thing is that pan of water that's in there also acts as a drip pan, and so if any of the sausages, you know, burst or get a crack in them and any grease, you know, spurts out, it'll end up in that pan of water rather than shooting down onto your hot coals down below. Because if you have the grease shoot down into the fire, it's going to be, again, a very large flame. And it will wreck whatever you're smoking. And, yeah, time for a little story here, I guess. A bunch of years ago, probably, close to 20, 25 years ago, I'd actually had built a smoker out of an old refrigerator. And, you know, it was back in the days before we knew better than to release Freon into the air. So it was basically a totally stripped out refrigerator. Yeah, basically an insulated box with a latch door on. And that one was an electric smoker. And I had one of these tabletop bocce grill things, the electric ones, where you could, you know, do rotisserie chicken or whatever on. And had that set up in there with a double thermostat setup to where one thermostat, when you'd plug it in normally at air temperature, both the circuits were basically closed. So what would happen is the wiring diagram, I could probably draw it out easier than explain it. But basically, I had two thermostats in there from a water heater. One I set for about 90 degrees. The other one I set at 140 degrees. That would keep the temperature like in a 50 degree range. When the temperature in the smoker would drop below 90 degrees, the thermostat would close. It'd start running the heater up to temperature. And when the the heating element would heat up, it would start charring a piece of apple or oak wood that I would have in it. Of course, obviously, once you start running that heating element, it's going to start warming up inside the smoker. And that was what the second thermostat was for. That when the temperature inside the smoker would hit 140 degrees, it would turn the electrics off. So it just kind of cycle its way through. I actually had about a, it's probably about a 15 or 20 pound ham hanging in the smoker going at one point. And I was getting ready to go to work one night when I had the smoker going. What I was doing was I started right around the first part of December. And I was doing a long, very long, cold smoking of this ham. And at that time I hadn't realized, and this is actually what made me realize I needed to use a drip pan. Because what happened with this ham was it actually got to the point where it's, you know, slowly warmed, you know, as it was smoking, and developed a fat pocket inside. And that fat pocket actually jetted right down onto the wood that was in the electric smoker portion. And the next time it kicked in and heated that up, it lit up that pork fat, the lard, and literally burned the smoker up. I was in the house and I would periodically check on the thing, make sure, okay, it's working. And I literally saw flame coming out around that door about 18 inches wide the whole way. You know, obviously ran out there, unplugged the thing as I went, pulled the door open and pulled that ham out from on top of the burning wood there, and, you know, threw it in the snowbank to put it out. Well, out of that large ham, I was able to salvage maybe 2 or 3 pounds of ham. The rest of it on the outside had burned that quickly from that flame that, like I said, all that long story was just to basically tell you, when you're running a smoker and you have, you know, a heat source below rather than off to one side, you need to have any fats that can conceivably end up in the fire, you want to have them ending up in a pan of water instead. So, okay. Let me think here. I think we pretty well covered that on the temperature gauge. The stock temperature gauge that's on the Brinkman smoker, they just basically, you know, read from warm to ideal to hot. And this gauge is basically, it's meant originally for, you know, the normal height of the smoker. And so the ideal range on here, if you roughly center it, that will give you a fairly cool smoke up at the top. If it's down low, like it originally had been, that would basically give you the ideal temperature for basically grilling and smoking at the same time. If it's up higher, you know, you just basically get the cold smoke. Okay, and then, like I said last time around, this is what we ended up with for eats that day, and it was very delicious. So, I'm going to put one more tune in here, and then I'll go ahead and talk a little bit about some of these recipes I've attached. So, forgive me if you get weirded out by this piece of music, but it's for fun.
Weekend's here and the work is done. Now I'm hungry and I want to have some fun. Fun, 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 fun. Hey! Pick up the phone and call up the guys. Come on over, we're gonna have a good, good time. Good, good, good time. Cousin Sal's here. Hey! Dickie's here.
Hey, Dickie.
Yammo's here. And he brought some beer.
Sausage party,
we're having.
sausage party's all about. Backyard wrestling.
Still that dum-dum sticking up in the bun-bun. Roll them with the peppers and the onion. And when I say onion, now it's time to eat it, cause it tastes so, so yum, yum,
yum. Cause it's a sausage party, sausage party. We're having a sausage party, eating sausages with my friends. I hope these good times never ever end. Sausage party, sausage party. We're having a sausage party, eating sausages and hanging out. That's what sausage party's all about, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, I know. I'm going to go to that excessively warm place for playing that thing. Yeah. That was Jimmy Kimmel, by the way. You know, just had to find something else that was a little bit more modern than the Armor Hot Dog theme. So, anyway, so let's see. We're getting down here towards the end of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. So let's do this. I'm going to just kind of run through quickly on this Ukrainian sausage and then a couple of the other ones that I have on the page here. Okay, the Ukrainian sausage, the recipe that's here on the main page is basically where it's showing that you just basically use a couple kinds of meats. This one's primarily a beef sausage. Have it both in metric and U.S. weight measurements. And this is a first fairly small batch. It's works out to, well, it's 1 kilogram, so, you know, 2.2 pounds. So you have a pound and a half of beef meat, and then either use pork jowls or hard fat trimmings or bacon. You know, use, 300 grams of that, which, in other words, is about two-thirds of a pound. You know, altogether, you have just over 2 pounds worth of sausage. The particular batch I'd made, I actually did a little bit better than a triple batch on it. So I ended up with a little over 7 pounds of meat and other mix. Actually, what I used was, when I made that, I actually split the difference. I used half beef and half pork, you know, ground beef and ground pork, and then went ahead and did hard fat trimmings. Now, these are a variable. Traditionally, though, the Ukrainian sausage is primarily beef with just some fat in there. You know, like I said, either with the hard fat trimmings, pork jowls, which is, again, a lot of fat in that, or bacon. These days, most bacon, pretty darn fatty. With our spices here, again, this is one of the sausages that's meant to be cooked after you smoke it. So you use the cure number one in it. And then for your quantities here, you end up with, 3 tablespoons of salt, a teaspoon of pepper, teaspoon of paprika, teaspoon of allspice, 1.5 teaspoons of marjoram, 1 clove of garlic. And for each clove of garlic, if you don't have fresh garlic, you can go ahead and, you can use dry garlic. You substitute about a level teaspoon of dry powdered garlic for each clove, and then a little bit of cold water. And so what you do is all your spices and your cures get mixed together in with a cup of water, basically so you can rehydrate them and whatnot. You mix that with your meats, you mix it through by hand, and just with the meats now. Once you get through mixing that all up, you can go ahead and grind up your pork fat, coarse grind it. You can mix it in gently to the rest of the stuff. The way I usually do is I take it and leave it set overnight. in either refrigerator, or if it's colder weather outside, I'll put it either out in my shop or one of my sheds. But basically, I just seal it up good and tight so no critters can get at it. Next day, I go ahead and chill my grinder or my electric stuffer attachment to make sure it's good and cold. I bring the prep my casings, get them on the horn, bring my meat in, and start feeding it and stuffing. So it's basically like I described the process before. This last bunch, I used 32 millimeter collagen casings. You can use roughly the same size of the natural casings. And, you know, just basically, you know, got the directions here for it. Okay, I'm going to switch over to another one of the recipes here. And this is for kielbasa, a Polska kielbasa. And again, just going to kind of run through this quick because I'll just, you know, point up the differences here. This particular one is actually, it's, you know, fairly popular up here in the upper Midwest. But for this, you use 3 pounds of boned pork butt. That could be also be a shoulder roast. 2 pounds of beef chuck roast, or it can be any other lean beef. You know, so here you have, it's swung around the other way. It's a 3-to-2 ratio instead of a 2-to-1 ratio that the Ukrainian sausage has. This is predominantly pork. 8 cloves of garlic, you know, 2 tablespoons kosher salt, black pepper, marjoram, and then it has here either Prague powder 1 or Instacure 1. It's basically, you know, number one cure, and ice water. And again, the meat gets chopped up, ground up, mixed with the spices. You allow it to meld for a little while. And of course, in this case, with a kielbasa, it's a fresh sausage, so you don't even set real long. Once it's all ground, ready to go, and chilled somewhat, you stuff it into large casings and smoke it, you know, to color. And the last one is the, I'm not even going to try pronouncing it, but it's a Polish hunter's sausage. And again, this one here, if you look at it, really predominantly pork. You know, 5.5 pounds of pork shoulder for almost 4.5 pounds of uncured ham. In other words, pork butt, you know, unsmoked ham. And only 1 pound of lean beef. It gives a difference in flavor. Okay, salt, obviously, Prague cure number one, or just cure. I'm going to have to recheck this because this particular one barfed out, you know, it tells me 2% teaspoon. I'm pretty sure that it's 2 teaspoons of Prague cure number one, but I'm not positive. Same thing goes for the sugar. Again, it's not a lot. Black pepper, 2 cloves of garlic raw, minced. Again, if you don't have fresh garlic, teaspoon of dry. And then it's probably about 3/8 of a teaspoon of ground juniper berries. That's what gives the hunter's sausage its flavor. And this here has got a little bit more of an extended smoking time. Basically what you do is, again, you leave the cure in it, you mix it, you let it cure. This particular one calls for leaving it refrigerated for 3 days. Definitely lets the flavors meld. Go ahead and grind the stuff, and at that point, stuff it into the casings, you know, form into rings or sticks as you want. You hang them up for about 6 hours after you've made them so that the surface of it dries off somewhat. And it says here, you know, it's very important not to smoke wet sausages. Very true. You got to have them dry because that way then the smoke will penetrate the casings better. And this one here, if you look at it, basically you smoke it, you know, at 3 different smoke levels the first day. You take it out, you hang it, let it cool for a day, and then you put it back in at a final smoking for another 4 to 5 hours. The reason you do it in these steps is so it dries the sausage. And this, like I said, this is one that can be either eaten fresh or cooked. I've done it both ways. I actually have to admit I like it when it's just when it's cold. You know, slice off and put it on sandwiches or use it as a snack. Okay, so, well, at this point here, I'm going to go ahead and put one last tune here, a Tennessee Ernie Ford one. And then once that's done, we'll be going to the archives. Have a good evening. Take care, people. Bye-bye.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high-toned woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me. Yeah!
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me, I'm free.
Please join us here on Just Measures Radio Network for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday. It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you.